In this episode of Movie Rollers, we're going to review The Hunger Games, Catching Fire, and Broken Circle Breakdown. It's time for Movie Rollers. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And Yazdi as well.
Movie Rollers is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, the show is for you. Greetings, everybody.
Hello.
Hello. So much has happened since we
It feels like a long time since we recorded.
Well, we went to Paris.
Yes.
Rashmi and I took a vacation over Thanksgiving.
You were slumming it, clearly.
You know, actually, we weren't living like five-star hotel lifestyle. We rented an apartment, which was
very nice.
Well, it was a little basic, but it was well located, and it was really cool to have an apartment in Paris because you can buy yogurts and cheeses, and
of which we sent you many pictures. Yes, yeah,
no, to burn a hole through my.
No, it's because we missed you, and we know how much
we wanted
you love
to torture him because he has a yogurt fetish.
I do have a yogurt fetish,
but there were literally
one
walls.
Of my two fetishes in life. One of them is for yogurt.
And
why
other?
Are they so much better on the continent? And when I say on the continent, sorry, that's a very English expression, but
in Europe, yeah,
yeah. Why? Because they're better in Europe than they are in England.
I think it's something to do with the milk.
I think the yogurt in the United States has gelatin in it.
Oh.
So I think that the yogurts in Europe, they don't put
they're
any kind
culture.
Of binders. They're culture. They're just cultures. That's why they tend to be a little looser, I think. Like
oh,
runnier.
So much better.
Oh, they're amazing.
Ooh, I don't like the idea of pork bones in my yogurt.
No, you don't have to have gelatin made of pork bones anymore.
I thought it was all from pork bones.
No,
I've
they
been
make
to Sioux
synthetic.
City, Iowa, the gelatin capital of the country.
They make
of the
synthetic
world,
and vegetarian gelatins,
yes,
now, Joe.
And you can use pectin instead of,
yes.
of gelatin, which is made from vegetables and fruits.
Why don't they just culture the damn milk?
Because I think it's harder, yeah. It's more difficult. Once you put a binder, it'll form every single time.
Well, the Europeans managed to do it.
Yeah.
And the FDA yogurt, must have some rule about it, I bet.
And the good yogurt doesn't even taste like yogurt. It tastes like custard and cream.
I know,
fruit.
It's so good.
And
the
even
full
the fruit
fat
is
whole
so good.
Milk yogurt is just divine.
But that's why I like Faye. Is it Faye, which I always call Farge? The Greek yogurt with the little corner of fruit, which we have in the fridge. Do you want one?
What's it called?
Should we do it? Faye.
Faye.
Faye is how you say it.
I used
in
to
Greek.
Call it Farge.
Yeah, we call it Farge.
It says Farge.
Or Fage.
Yeah.
It's Faye.
Just to mess
we could up. Have one right now. We have some in the fridge. We have one.
We're recording a podcast.
I know. We could have our yogurt as
no,
well.
No,
this part of the podcast brought to you by the European Yogurt Association.
Anyway, other than yogurt, France was a lot of fun. It was freezing cold.
Freezing
yes. cold. But we ate and we had hot chocolate and it was really a wonderful city to be there. In fact, Rashmi and I were joking. The last time we were in Paris, it was a year after we'd graduated college. I was paying off college loans and we had to make an economic decision as to whether or not we would go up the Eiffel Tower. And we decided not to, preferring instead to have a nice dinner.
Mm-hmm.
But that was...
Oh, the choices you have to make.
We were that broke. It was so funny.
Yeah. But and in true Movie Wallace style, we did pay homage to the steps, the tour of Midnight in Paris. We did the steps... And we did some of the little walks, and we did
Shakespeare
Book Company from Midnight in Paris, and
some of the movies.
Before Sunset, Before Sunrise, one of those.
I know, I always get the two of them mixed up.
Yeah. Anyway, it was very nice. How about you, Yazdi? How was your Thanksgiving?
It was very nice. I went to two different places, and I ate.
Wow.
Yeah, it was very nice, and then I felt... all bloated and guilty. So next day I did a hike where I almost killed myself. Went to Mount Woodson for the first time. And I had to
take the trail from Lake Poway?
I did. And I at no point did I doubt that I would not complete it, but at many points I doubted that I might just die. You know? But that's a tough hike. But it was fun. It was a good weekend.
Yeah, I did it on a hot day last year, and it's the kind of hike that when you're about two-thirds of the way through it, your body is spent.
Yeah.
And you know that there's another third of the way to go. So it's just a one foot in front of the other hike.
But it's relentless because it's all incline. You don't get any respite.
Wow.
No. You don't.
And it's, but on the way back, it's down.
Oh, on the way back, it's wonderful because you're just going down all the way.
Yeah.
Well, for anyone that's coming to visit San Diego, you should check that out. It's one of the better hikes here. I enjoyed that one a lot, but boy, was it tough.
Nothing like what Katniss faced in the Hunger Games, though.
Good segue.
Yeah.
That's one of the better ones, actually.
Poor Katniss.
Yes.
So let's talk about The Hunger Games Catching Fire. Yes, Dee.
So Hunger Games Catching Fire, of course, is an adaptation of the very popular series of books from author Suzanne Collins. And this one is based on the second book in the series. Gary Ross, who directed the first movie, passes on the reins to Francis Lawrence, who previously directed I Am Legend and Constantine. So he's kind of used to, you know, futuristic dystopian movies. The entire Hunger Games books are set in a future dystopian world which is divided into districts based on economic and political wealth. Our young heroine Katniss Everdeen and Peter Mellark have just won the Hunger Games, in which two young kids from each district are made to fight and kill until the final one emerges alive and victorious. That was the first movie. In the second movie, they have precious little time to savor their victory, since the all-powerful capital, sensing a major revolt from the people, announces a new edition of the game. Only this is a quarter-century version, which is where the contestants are picked from amongst past winners. And Katniss is plunged once again against her wishes into a new set of games. Jennifer Lawrence, of course, plays Katniss Everdeen. Josh Hutcherson plays Peeta. Liam Hemsworth plays Gale. And Donald Sutherland, Elizabeth Banks, Stanley Tucci return for the second edition with new cast members Sam Cleflin, Jeffrey Wright, Gina Malone, and Philip Seymour Hoffman. So this movie, I think, has officially made more money than any other in 2013. It beat the Iron Man 3 record.
Really?
Yeah, I'm looking at Rotten Tomatoes right now, and it's 335 million so far. That's
In the US, yeah. Doesn't include...
Oh, really? That's US-only box office takings?
I think so.
Wow.
So, obviously, everybody's seen it. It's made a ton of money. What do you guys think about it?
Dear Hunger Games, the original, I wanted to let you know how sorry I am for trashing you when I watched you. Little did I know that if I had taken the time to read the book, I would have enjoyed you a lot more. Okay, but I still stand by the fact that the first Hunger Games should have stood alone as a movie. That said, I loved Catching Fire. This is a great adaptation and a good movie that's richer than the first film.
Joseph?
Boy, oh boy, did I love this movie. I think it was like the first movie enhanced by the knowledge of the book. And Yazdi, I think you were the one that actually told me to read the books.
Yes.
I enjoyed the first Hunger Games movie without knowledge of the books. After watching the first one, I was inspired to read the trilogy. I read the trilogy. This was my favorite book of the trilogy. And I just
And then we rewatched Hunger Games again.
Oh. Yeah. I just don't think they could have adapted this any better than they did. This was the perfect adaptation of that story. I think they nailed every single moment. Jennifer Lawrence was amazing in this. Everything, it was a fabulous adaptation. I love this movie. I want to see it again.
Yeah, I think for a person who's watching this movie without any context, or hasn't seen the previous movie, isn't familiar with the books, it might seem like a fairly ordinary achievement. But if you're familiar, like you said, Rashmi, with the source material, I would agree with what Joe said. This is about as good as you can do with that source material. I mean, like most people, the second book is the favorite, is my favorite in the trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this is a very dense book. There's a lot of content. There's a lot which happens very quickly, both physically as well as subterranean, you know, the subterranean level emotionally. And it's almost impossible to get it all within 2 hours. And this movie, you know, it makes a few allowances here and there, but it's still pretty remarkable. This is a pretty well-made, well-considered, not lazy piece of filmmaking.
Yeah, and it's actually 2.5 hours. It's nearly a 2.5 hour movie, and it's interesting, Yaki, because this is the first long movie I've sat through where it didn't even feel like 2 hours had gone by. I think the first time I looked at my watch, we were probably about 2 hours into the movie, and then there was only about half an hour to go. But I was that engrossed. It took me that much into it that honestly, the time just flew.
Yeah, I mean, I can't really express anything different. I mean, I think this was so well judged and well paced from start to finish. I mean, it didn't feel like a long movie. I do think that the story is somewhat, as you alluded to, it's somewhat opaque for those who aren't intimate with the source material. And I think that's my only real criticism of the movie, that you do have to have some familiarity, not just with the previous movie, but I think you need to understand what's going on in this universe, because I think without that knowledge, the movie, I thought, made a lot of assumptions about the world that one wouldn't ordinarily come to.
Yeah.
Yeah, and what do you think? Do you think someone who hasn't seen the first one would be able to pick up here?
No.
I saw it with a friend, Naveed, and he didn't know, he hadn't watched the first movie, familiar with, you know, with the story.
Oh, that's it. So what do you think?
And he still enjoyed it. He still enjoyed it a lot. And I think the movie is doing as well as it is because it stands independently. Maybe people won't get as much out of it, but I think it independently as a piece of, you know, action, adventure, kind of, you know, at that level, you know, it works.
Yeah, that's surprising to hear, because I think one of the things that jarred me in the first Hunger Games movie was the goings-on in the capital. And so the capital is kind of this central ruling zones, ruling district within this universe, if you aren't familiar with the movie. And it's just a very weird universe. You know, people look strange, they talk strange, and they have this very peculiar way about them that doesn't make sense until you do read into the books and you understand a bit of the history of that universe. So,
yeah.
I know, Rashmi, that you found that very off-putting in the original Hunger Games, and I'm just delighted that somebody who's never walked into, who's not familiar with the series, could get anything out of that.
Yeah.
I also think that, you know, maybe it's just familiarity, but people have kind of moved on from some of the things which, you know, caused a lot of commentary with the first movie, which is about, you know, kids killing each other.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of violence and there's, you know, essentially, you know, how do you justify people killing each other for the sake of the games? And I think by this point, everybody's sort of moved on from that point. And maybe it's a bad thing that nobody questions it anymore. But
well, and in this, remember, in this one, there aren't, it's not really kids killing kids either. They're actually older population. So
right, because it's the past winner. So, right. So most of the players are, there are no kids actually.
Right.
Well, maybe a couple.
One,
yeah,
one or
so
two.
So I think it bypasses that. I mean, I think the other piece is that most of the books are written through Katniss's first-person account. I mean, it is her talking.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of stuff that's happening emotionally to her, which by definition is very difficult to convey unless you hear voiceover, which I'm glad they're not doing.
Yeah.
But you lose some of that. I mean, especially because, you know, Katniss is kind of torn between, you know, Peeta and Gale. And I'm really happy that they completely downplayed it and they did not make it too Twilight-y.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I was just going to say, but the thing that I admired the most is that essentially these are tween books, but there isn't any pandering to a tween audience in this film. And I was really pleased to see that.
I wanted more blood. I mean, I still feel like I want to watch the, you know, the R-rated version of The Hunger Games. Some aspects of the movie are very violent and very dark. So, you know, I want the, you know, the Paul Verhoeven version with, right, you know, marching soldiers, blood everywhere, over the top kind of action. Because I think for me, that would really convey the gravity and of the situation that these people are in and these worlds. I want the 1984 dystopia, the really dark stuff, to come through more. So I do think it is somewhat catered to a younger audience because of that. And I think, you know, the source material comes from that place. So fair enough. But
yeah, but it's not Twilight-y. As you said, it's not Twilight-y at all.
I'm glad they don't do the kind of hormonal teenager stuff.
Yeah.
And you know, to Suzanne Collins' great credit, she doesn't do it in the books either. I mean, Katniss is kind of torn between the two of them, but maybe a bit more so because you can hear her talk.
Yeah.
You know.
And that's the only aspect of the books that I don't like. I think there is that. But, you know, the Katniss in the movies feels a little bit older because she is being played by Jennifer Lawrence, who is a little bit older and a little bit more mature.
I would agree.
The Katniss in the books is like a teenager, right?
Yeah, she's 15 or 16, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Anything else? I mean, I agree with you, Joe. Jennifer Lawrence, Josh Hutcherson, great performances. Really yeah. good performances.
And not just good performances, but really on-the-nose casting.
Yes.
I mean, Josh Hutch, I mean, so I read the second and the third book after seeing the first movie, and when I was reading Peter Mellark, Josh Hutcherson's face kept coming up to me. I imagined the actor as how it was written, and that's a testament to how well they have cast it. And same thing with Gail and, you know,
everyone. So I mean, yeah. Stanley Tucci is one of my favorites.
Elizabeth Banks,
you know. Yeah.
Okay. Anything else or ready to score?
No.
Okay. Yes, go ahead.
I mean, if you're going to make a big blockbuster behemoth, you know, adaptation of an intensely popular set of books, this is how you should do it. I mean, it does everybody proud. It's not exceptional by any means, but it's so well-tuned, well-oiled, and well-considered. It all just comes together as a very handsome package. Somewhere between a 7 and an 8 out of 10, and I'm going to back down to a 7 out of 10.
Joe?
I mean, I think that's a very stingy score there, Yasdi. I think this movie was as good as I had hoped it would be, and I went in with high expectations. I'm now a fan of the series. I think everyone did a terrific job in this, Jennifer Lawrence in particular, but I think overall the pacing, the direction, the judgment, there were a couple of hammy lines of dialogue, but I'll forgive the movie that. And I literally came out of the movie choked up. It ended so abruptly and I knew what was going to happen, but I was right there in that moment. So one of my favorite movies of the year, I can't believe I'm saying this, you know, haven't given many nines this year.
Oh, do it.
And I don't know why I'm not going to do that today.
Do it.
Why?
I don't know. All right, I'll give it arm twisted. 9 out of 10.
All right.
My desire to watch the next movie is alight. I can't wait for our penultimate installment. I'm going to give this an 8 out of 10.
You said penultimate.
Yep.
Yeah.
But it's the next trilogy.
No, so the
Joe is being evocative. right, so basically Mockingjay, which is the third book, has actually been split into two films.
Which terrifies me.
Which really scares me. I wish they hadn't done it. And I think if any book could have been easily split into two, it would have been this one.
I agree.
And I would have made two movies out of Catching Fire rather than two movies out of Mockingjay.
Yep.
Yeah.
So
unless they're going to give us something slightly different. And they have deterred a little bit from the books, which is good. Maybe we'll get something different. Maybe we'll get something more.
Yeah. And I did want to comment on on the fact that you mentioned that the ending was abrupt. That's how it's in the book. And, you know, it was fine. But even when it came, even though I'd read the book, it still kind of shook me. But when I watched it in the cinema, there were three people who like screamed out at the screen saying, "Come on, don't do that." I mean, they used some expletives because they expected the movie to kind of resolve and have everything tied up at the end. And I guess people should know that this is part of a series of books.
Yeah.
And maybe they were thinking it's like the Harry Potter films where every Harry Potter movie stands by itself. You know, the bad guy is vanquished and, you know, it's a whole new adventure with the new.
I mean, it's very tough to do that on the big screen because it's not, you know, when you get a cliffhanger, when you get kind of this big moment that needs resolution, it's really tough to have to face the fact that you're going to have to wait a year for this, right? I think that is very frustrating. And, you know, we all have read the book, so we kind of know what happens next and we understand. It's not as frustrating to us. We just want to see the movie play out. But to those who are unfamiliar with the story,
go get the book.
Well, it's just a frustrating cliffhanger.
Yeah. And, you know, The Hobbit, which we'll talk about in a future episode, faces exactly the same situation. And we'll talk about how it goes about doing that.
All right. Move on. Next movie was Broken Circle Breakdown.
Yep. So the Broken Circle Breakdown is a new film by Felix van Groningen. It's a film that's based on the stage play with the same name by Johan Heldenberg and Micah Dobbles, with which they filled all manner of theatres, church halls, public houses, and cultural centres. So it's based in Belgium, and it's in Flemish, and it has a whole host of Flemish characters and actors in it, which I won't even try to pronounce. So out in theatres at the moment, it basically tells the story of a couple who have a young daughter who's been diagnosed with cancer. So, Yazdi, why don't you go first?
So, you know, we always talk about that perfect trifecta, which is a hallmark of great films, which is, you know, good acting, good writing, and good directing. But I think here is a film that maybe doesn't do all of those three things particularly well or exceptionally, but I think what elevates this movie is uncommonly clever editing. And by editing, I do not mean, you know, how scenes have been cut in the immediate to fit one after the other. I mean how the entire film is structured. And the only other movie that comes to mind in recent memory, which did this remarkably well, was 500 Days of Summer. Hmm. Where essentially, you know, it, like you said, it's a story about a man, woman, and their child over a period of 6 or so years. And, you know, but what the movie does is it starts in the middle in terms of chronology and then kind of dips back and forth so that you're really disoriented initially. You're thinking, well, in this scene, she was pregnant. And in this scene, you know, she has a baby. And it takes you a while to kind of piece everything together. So it starts at the middle of this circle and kind of leaps back and forth, almost making concentric circles in terms of the plot. And while that might seem gimmicky, I really appreciated it because scene by scene, they've thought through, you know, based on the information you know, and more importantly, the information you don't know, it has a particular emotional impact. So I overall really enjoyed that more than anything else about the movie.
Joe?
This is one of those episodes where I wish I had got the chance to speak first, because what you've said is exactly what I wrote down here. It was beautifully edited, but it was a non-linear way that the story played out. And I literally wrote down, it was almost like it began in the middle and then worked its way out to both ends. And that to me was really a fascinating way to tell this story, because I think had this been a linear movie, it would have been... mediocre is too harsh a word, because it was still very excellently done, but this movie to me was elevated. I almost wrote it off in the first 10 minutes as not being my kind of thing, and I was drawn more and more in as the kind of the story dipped back and forth. So I really enjoyed this film.
See, this is where I wish I had got to speak first. No, I'm just kidding. So what I took away from this movie is, it's amazing that Flemish people can sing country and bluegrass that authentically. Yes. And well. And the other thing I took away is shit happens and then you die. And for all the reasons that you just stated why you liked the movie is why I didn't like the movie. I did like it, I should say. But my experience was lessened by the fact that there was too much jumping around and it felt too gimmicky to me. So I didn't buy this whole, like, it tried almost to be too clever. And I almost feel like if it had been a linear story, I would have got more out of it, because I would have gone along with the journey of the characters. I just found from scene to scene, I had to keep like resetting in my brain. Now, where are we? Which year are we in? Which part of the story are we in?
And that's what I enjoyed.
But if that's the challenge, then that doesn't say much about the story.
It's a stylistic thing, right?
Yeah.
Well,
I actually think, I mean, as much as I enjoyed the structure of the movie, I think even if it was played linear, it would have been very effective. I think the movie, I mean, first of all, the movie just features some remarkably good acting.
Yes, I agree.
The female lead, Verlaine Battens. I mean, she's been nominated. She was nominated by the San Diego Film Critics Society as best female actor, and it's very, very uncommon for, you know, somebody from a foreign film to be picked. I mean, these are actors who are not necessarily doing their acting in a look ma no hands kind of showy way. I mean, these are very good, juicy roles, and they just do justice to it. So I think just by virtue of the story, and this story, I mean, how many times have we seen the story, you know, of a child with terminal illness and the family dealing with it, but They somehow
it was
make it
entirely
work.
Believable.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what, you know, so this is exactly to answer your last question. I did like the movie. I did enjoy the movie because it was so real and so raw. And I think those performances were so vanity free.
Yeah.
And when I compare it something to like Rabbit Hole from a couple of years ago, or is it My Sister's Keeper?
The one with Cameron Diaz?
Cameron, yeah.
Yeah, maybe, yeah.
Is it called My Sister's Keeper?
It sounds right.
Any of those type of films that have that Hollywood touch to them, this is way better. I mean, this is a much more elevated movie because it deals with the really hard issue of losing a child in a very dramatic way that you can really get on board with.
In a very raw and real way.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that was my take home. It was what this event did to their relationship that became fascinating to me, and it was what it did to them individually as well. That, you know, I was more and more intrigued by. And that's kind of why I like the structure of it, because you would see this kind of downhill trajectory of the way that they were dealing with life. But at the same time, it was kind of juxtaposed with the sweetness of them coming together, you know. And we didn't learn a lot about how the relationship was initiated until kind of, you know, the final third of the movie. Yeah. And, you know, so it was always this kind of back and forth thing that intrigued me. I loved that kind of constant contrast and shift in expectations.
Yeah,
I mean, I do completely agree with what you said about the relationship. I think this movie does one of the things which is very difficult to do, or I've seen very seldom done well in cinema, which is to demonstrate that, you know, the one person that you unequivocally love so much, and, you know, that same person can, you know, without actually any deliberate ill intention, you know, drive you completely insane. And people are who they are and they don't change. And one of the hardest things to do is to kind of accept all the rough edges in the person that you care for more than anybody else. And sometimes that's the hardest thing in the world to do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And this movie drove home that point so beautifully.
Yeah. There's an absolutely wonderful scene where they're talking about their loss, and the guy is giving some completely meaningless examples, but the woman is taking them all as, like, you know, knife in the back type stabbing comments. Right. And that is what happens when a couple, I think, has to deal with that kind of a loss. I mean, you see that, and it's just really, really well done.
I also like that it wasn't acted by beautiful people. It felt like it was acted by real people, and I think that also elevated the movie in terms of its drama.
Yeah.
And there were little touches, I think, about each character. I mean,
and her with her tattoos. And her with her tattoos.
Yeah.
And their love of bluegrass. I mean, I think the score for this music.
You know, you watch something and we'll talk about it. You watch something like Inside Llewyn Davis and you're like, oh yeah, probably they sang it. You know, Justin Timberlake sang it. I watched this movie and I was 100% convinced none of these people sang it. I'm like, this has got to be lip sync. It wasn't even a question in my mind. I said, oh, they're good actors. They, you know, they're making it work. And imagine my shock to find out that these very same actors, and it's a big band, they actually sang it. And this is not, you know, even and more than average, better than average
beautiful
score. This is an exceptional score.
I mean,
beautiful score.
And the songs are amazing. Actually, when the film finished, we both looked at each other and said, why don't we listen to bluegrass more?
Yeah. A slice of Belgian Americana.
I mean, it's amazing. Who knew that, you know, that it's so popular there? But I mean, when both the male lead and the female lead, their voices are so pure. I mean, there's a purity about it. And I don't normally go for that kind of music. You know, you won't find a lot of that on my playlist, but it just gets to you.
It does.
It just gets to you. And that's brilliant.
We have one bluegrass CD in our collection, and that's Dixie Chick, so I'm not sure that even counts.
Right. Okay. Anything else on this one?
Just one minor criticism here, which was movie got a little preachy towards the end. Yeah. I was a little annoyed. I mean, I could understand that's where the character was coming from. He had a very strong political position that he was trying to get across. But it felt to me at that point, it took me out of the movie because it felt like whoever wrote the movie was trying to make a statement as opposed to that character getting on his soapbox. So I don't know. I mean, maybe the author feels that way. I don't know. But it just felt like it was trying to make this political statement towards the end. And I wished it hadn't done that, because I don't know that the reaction was real enough for me to buy it.
But I actually liked it for that. Because, you know, movies are so seldom afraid. You know, in the United States, you know, people are so equally divided, you know, between Republican and Democratic lines that, you know, most films are afraid that if they take a very strong stand politically, they're all automatically alienating one half of the population, one half of the audience. And so nobody really takes a stand. And like you, I thought, oh, it's kind of interesting that it makes such a strong, I mean, it calls out George W. Bush, you know, towards the end many times. And, you know, it takes a very strong stand. But the more I've let it percolate in my mind, I think it was mainly used as a plot device. I hope it was used as a plot device to make the case for why this lead character was so angry about his situation as he was, and because of what was happening to his daughter.
I wish I had perceived it that way, because instead I found that this character ended up making this very outspoken political statement almost out of the blue. It, like, there was no build up towards it in my mind.
I think there was.
Maybe I just didn't buy it.
I don't mind
movies taking a political position. I think I actually applaud them for doing that. That's not my criticism here. It was just, it didn't feel like it was the voice of the character. It felt like it was the voice of the screenwriter. And that's where
I can see what you're saying, but I took it as something completely different, which was people react to loss in such different ways, and this character who seemed to have it all together took that moment, which you least likely expect, to completely melt down.
Use it as something to blame.
Yeah.
I would have just liked to get there a little bit more gradually.
Okay, so Joe, you go first.
A terrific movie. It was interesting. Its construction, its story was a very touching and tragic one. I think this is among the better foreign language movies that I've seen this year. Not that we've seen an awful lot this year, but I'm going to give this an 8 out of 10.
Yes, about an hour into this film, you know, I consciously felt something, and it was kind of a warmth. I know it sounds tacky even as I'm saying it, but I sensed contentment. You know, I sensed, you know, like the kind of feeling you get when you know that you're in the hands of a good filmmaker. Mm-hmm. And I almost relaxed my shoulders and I stopped trying to fight the movie or understand it. I almost surrendered to the movie. And, you know, up until the final act, where I do think the movie gets a little overwrought, it was almost nearly a perfect film for me. I was so enjoying it in the moment. And I seldom really, and I appreciate movies, I respect them, but I don't really enjoy them. I mean, this is kind of a Yazdi kind of movie. And I really wish the movie does go a little over the top towards the end. And that, you know, but even regardless, I mean, I like it so much that, you know, I'm able to accept its flaws. I mean, I really like this movie a lot. I give it an 8 out of 10,
okay,
which seems stingy to me. People should go watch it. More people need to see this.
I agree. Well acted, well directed, great music, sad subject. 7 out of 10, just because I didn't like the structure.
A very European movie.
You think?
Yeah. I can't see this. I don't see Hollywood doing this in this way.
No, but it's certainly more mainstream than, say, Blue is the Warmest Color. No, it's a little bit more accessible.
Perhaps so, yeah. No? Okay. Perhaps, yeah. All right, I'll give you that.
But yeah, but I agree. I mean, it has a very, very lived-in sensibility.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Terrific stuff. Yeah. Okay, two good movies this week. Mm-hmm. That's not always the case on Movie Wallace, so
I think it's going to happen more and more the rest of this month.
You know, it is that time of year where the good movies start to come out and play, mm-hmm. and that I've certainly been feeling that. We've got a whole list of movies here that we're going to review in the coming up shows, and there's not a lot of stinkers there. So fun times for movie watchers. Let us know what you think. Mail at moviewallers.com, twitter.com/moviewallers, and facebook.com/moviewallers as well. Are we at 500 fans yet?
Almost.
Oh.
Almost.
Come on, everybody. Tell people to join our Facebook page. We'd love to hit 500. So if you know somebody who's a movie fan and is not a Movie Wallace fan, then put them right.
Tell them what they're missing.
Yes.
Until next time, too many movies, too little time. Good night from me.
And me.
And me as well.